Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
All right, so here we are. Last time as we left off on the Steve Austin Show, I was talking to Tommy Dreamer. The lights are down. Cars passing by. I'm on my third Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. That's right. I said Pale Ale. They don't have the extra Torpedo IPA that I so desire. Nonetheless, we're still shooting the breeze. Tommy, you talk about your relationship with your wife, your two daughters, about being a good man, about remembering the fact that you're 43 years of age. So now with the House of Hardcore, your promotion, you've redefined what hardcore is. Have you not? I read your mission statement. You've got several websites. I forgot to cover some of your social media on the last show. I'll do that on my ins and outs. The Tommy Dreamer on Twitter.
Correct.
TheTommyDreamer.com. House of
Hardcore.
HouseofHardcore.net.
Yes, you don't want to go on .com. Well, you do want to go on
.com. Okay, so the HouseofHardcore.net. So your mission statement about hardcore wrestling has changed. Or your stance, seemingly.
My stance is, well, again, I don't have the funds to test guys with blood. So I've been recently tested for AIDS, hepatitis, all that stuff.
No, but my point is on your mission, you're talking about the hardcore aspect. Yes. is the dedication.
It's no politics, no BS, just wrestling.
Yes.
I don't care.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
It's not about blood. It's not about falling through
never
chairs,
was.
Tables, blah, 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 blah.
Never
blah.
Was. It's about work ethic.
Right.
You're hardcore, Steve. You think about all that you have done for this business, the bumps, the bruises, your work rate. You hit the road. I'll never forget. Paul Heyman, I don't care what you did in the business. Paul Heyman would always say, look at how he hits those ropes. You hit those ropes every single night, no matter what. You were hurt or not, like a bat out of hell. You ran into those ropes. You never dogged it. I just did a House of Hardcore show in California. 69-year-old Terry Funk DDT'd a kid on the stage. I told him to do nothing. That's Terry Funk's work ethic. We want to go out there. I don't care if you have a great body. I don't care if you are a great looking guy. If you have something to offer and you have a talent, I want to show the world it. Again, too much politics in wrestling, too much bullshit in wrestling. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Politics and bullshit and wrestling, we're talking about the probably the larger organizations. How bad is that dynamic within the structure at Stanford? Because you worked there for...
I was in television.
And I want to go back to last week. You were talking about you sitting down and asking Vince for your release. You were ready to go and do something else. And you've been gone from them now for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But, dude, I mean, so you got a great job. You're in the office. And you're paying those gimmicks they send in the mail called bills. You're not, you know, taking too many bumps or any bumps, and you won't out.
I wasn't happy.
Right.
I went to WWE. You can't put a price tag on your own happiness.
No doubt.
We went. I had my little run. It was nothing memorable from 2001 till 2004. Then they put me in the office. I loved helping hiring people and fulfilling their dreams, and I took that job very, very serious. Behind the scenes is what killed me, and what made me hate wrestling at times. I didn't want to be that guy. Now we're bringing back ECW, the first one-night stand, write the show with Paul. It's a success. I think I'm going to get the gigantic, hey, this is it. They're going to see me. Not only did I write the show, I agented every match. The pay-per-view did millions of dollars for everybody. This is it. Vince is going to see it in me. This Vince got to see the real Tommy Dreamer. And it was Monday. I specifically showed up to work on that Monday. I went on fire that match with the Dudleys and Sandman. I had my Bubba cane me in my ear that the doctor said my ear may fall off. That's how severe trauma I had. I wanted my ear to fall off while I was sitting in that office. Nicole D'Orazio was our mutual friend, the one who hooked us up for Do the Show. She was my saving grace in that office because she was my friend. Mark Carano was my saving grace, and John Laurinaitis was my saving grace too. But I wanted to show my – because you cannot outwork Vince McMahon. And I wanted to show that Vince, even though my ear may fall off, if my ear falls off at this desk, I want you to know my ear fell off for you. Because I have decided that besides my own father, Vince McMahon is the most influential man in my life. Because this is all I've ever wanted to do since I'm 9 years old. And it was from the majority of what I saw him do, and it's, you know, from wrestling. So then we're bringing 2006, pay-per-view comes, and hey, we're going full board. It's Tommy, you're in charge. We want this to be different. I was actually Paul's boss, which Paul was a pleasure. Then I saw it become more of the corporate. It just became another WWE product. And I was quickly removed from that because my opinions are usually different than the corporate structure. Anyway, the new ECW is going. You get told a lot of things. They didn't care for a lot of the ECW guys. I was happy they got on, you know, national television. I was happy to be there for WrestleMania. They were still dangling that carrot. For me personally, for 3 years that show was on the air, I was the highest rated main event every year. They were doing nothing with me, but whenever I was in the main event, I was the highest rated guy. Me and Chavo Guerrero, 1-4. Me and Mark Henry, a 1-3. Me and Vladimir Kozlov, three segments, a 1-1, which was like a UFC shoot fight for me.
Yeah.
Highest rated, and they still wouldn't go with me. And so I went to Vince, and when you weren't in this situation, when you're in WWE and you're making money, it's amazing. When you're not a top guy and or you meet your downside and they're bringing you to TVs, you're making not a whole lot of money. You're right. Making like $500 a night. They may just use you for TVs. With that $500 a night, you got to pay your hotel for two nights, a rental car. You're not making money. And you're coming to a place where I was just getting beat for the sake of getting beat. And I just said it wasn't worth it anymore. My kids were, this was 2009. My daughters were 4, 5. I was on the road 300 days a year. And I just knew, you kind of, even though I had just signed a contract with them, everything I did in my life, and especially there, was real. My contract was coming up. I went to Vince. Vince, listen, you're Vince McMahon. You're a businessman. I'm the highest rated dude. My contract's up. If you don't, I'm giving you my out. If you don't want me to stick around, I will lose to Jack Swagger and or to Christian at Extreme Rules, and I'm gone. I'll say goodbye. But let me prove it to you. He went with it. It worked. 3 months later, I'm back in the same boat. And so I just went to him. I said, Vince, listen. And I just signed a deal. And I just said, I can't be here anymore. There was one person in WWE that does not like me. He would bury me in all the meetings. And I had friends there. Yeah, I had agents there. Everybody liked me except one person.
Right.
And I get it.
Yeah.
So I said, Vince, how do I – and he said, Tommy, I don't want you to go. And I looked right in his eyes and I said, how do I stay? I can't work any harder. You're supposed to be this great businessman and you're not pushing me for the ratings. And then he was like, well, we're going to go with NXT. And he goes, you're not – the only thing you don't have is youth. I said, then you're right. So then I should go. I don't want to be this guy who just hangs around.
So what did he say?
He said, okay. I'm sorry. I'd rather – he said, I need guys for you to teach and be on the road with, blah, blah, blah. I said, but I really am not on the road. And if your heart ain't into it, and I don't ever want to be that guy who hated wrestling. So it was funny because, you know, Vince is a little crazy at times and we love him to death. But my last match was supposed to be against Lance Hoyt, Vance Archer. I got beat in 6 minutes in Orlando. That was it. I remember going home and I was done. That Thursday, the head writer calls me up and he's like, well, we had a meeting and in the meeting you know, when you're in talent relations, if someone is let go from the company or someone leaves the company, they send a mass email saying that person's no longer with the company, you know? So they said, would you mind coming back? We're doing TV at the Meadowlands. Vince kind of like cut a promo on us. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they said, Vince was not happy with the main event of Evan Bourne versus Matt Hardy. And he said, well, what are you going to do? What about Tommy Dreamer? And now the whole room was silent because they knew that I just had left.
Right.
And someone said, well, Tommy's no longer with us. And Vince, they said, stood up, was like, what the hell happened to Tommy? And they were like, he doesn't work here anymore.
Oh, no.
And Vince was like, that's not true. Yeah, yes, he does. And they're like, well, okay. Like, you know, they didn't want to say.
Right. You're the one to let him go.
Yeah. And so they asked me to come back, and I had an amazing farewell. at the Meadowlands. My wife, my kids were there. I got to say goodbye, and it was against Zack Ryder. And I cut a promo. I went long, and the first person through that curtain was Vince. And he gave me this big hug. It was great. They had all the wrestlers there. It was real. I mean, it was as real as television you're ever going to get. And, you know, I never said I was going to retire because I've also, like, you know, we talk about from last week's show, I've always been a man of my word. When I say I'm retiring, I will never wrestle again. I have, for TNA, I said, I wrote a show called Hardcore Justice. I said I would never wrestle Raven again. I have never wrestled Raven again in a singles. People have put us together in tags. But I'm a man of my stipulations. I hated when people would say, oh, I'm retiring, and then they come back. I think you're jipping the fans. For my own House of Hardcore show, I said I will never tag with, and you do, it's also to sell tickets. I will never tag with Terry Funk ever again. He could be in my corner. But I said, this is the last time you're going to see me and Terry Funk together. So
now, why'd you say that?
One, as a promotional tool to make something special, to, yes, sell DVDs. But Terry, when I'm talking with Terry, he's like, I don't know how much more he can go. He's told me this. Right. And then, okay, everything to me in wrestling needs to be special. And Terry, then let me just do this. Okay. And he'll still wrestle, but I won't tag with him because I made that a stipulation.
Okay. Now, and this is a question that I should be asking Terry Funk, but I'll ask you as to speculation. Why in the hell is Terry Funk still out there doing it? I mean, he's got to feel like shit.
He's got new knees. Shit. He's got new hip. Because he's Terry Funk. There's no one like him. You meet a lot of veterans that you grew up idolizing, and a lot let you down. Terry doesn't. And it's funny. He said to me, everyone talks to him like, oh, you've retired a million times. And he says, I am officially retired until some mark wants to pay me money to pull me out of retirement. So whenever I call him to book him, I say, hey, Terry, it's this mark, I'm calling you up. He's like, I love it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So with Terry, Terry is Terry. Dude, my House of Hardcore show, it was me and him versus Lance Storm and X-Pac. The show before that was me versus Lance with Terry Funk in my corner. And for a brief moment, it was 1997 all over again.
Right.
It was a moment in time, and it was great. His last time tagging, I gave you the DVD. The entire arena was crying because they realized they're never going to see this again.
Right.
And just, you know, the music was playing, and he's, you know, he's like, you bastard, you got me. You got me. And because this business is all about emotion. Here's, I'm crying. Terry Funk's crying. Lance Storm is crying. X-Pac's crying. Angelina loves crying. The audience is crying. And then we're going to go out and beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
But it's just, Terry is Terry. And he went into that match. A week before, he tore his ab in Japan with his brother tagging. And
Dory Jr. still working too?
Yes. Okay. They worked like 30 minutes in Japan. It's a different style in Japan. Terry goes out.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
Work.
And I'm sure they made, I know what Terry gets paid. He makes a great living. A lot of people, it's a high mortgage payment for what.
Right.
And God bless him that he still gets it. So Terry Funk at 69 years old with a torn ab was still better than 50% of a lot of guys out there. And
yeah.
He's like, you know, in the back, guys, take care of me, you know, blah, blah, blah. He came in and beat the shit out of everybody. Yeah. And it's just, there is no, that's hardcore to me. That's 69 torn ab and going out there and not just taking a paycheck.
Okay, well, let's talk about hardcore and the fact that it's all about really hard work, dedication, commitment, and doing things right as best you can. So you were the innovator of violence.
Mm-hmm.
How did the innovator of violence, and then I'll segue into my question, but tell me how the innovator of violence came to be.
At the time, everyone had a moniker. You were Stone Cold. You were the Rattlesnake. Everyone had a nickname. I creatively thought of ways to introduce weapons into the match, like tie a frying pan to my foot and give a guy ninzagiri. I did a lot of...
That's great.
I was the first person to use a camera
right
in the match. And then, and back to, this was last week, talking about, you know, Paul being in bed with WWE. And I remember it was a finish of a show, and I had the cameraman get up. I took the camera, I hit the guy with it. Boom, pinned him, 1, 2, 3. The very next night, they used it with Sean and Sid and switched the title. And I remember going to Sean, and I remember going to Sid and asking them, and they were like, Vince just came in and changed it. And I remember when I saw that, I was with Paulie,
yeah,
and he's like, they have stooges everywhere. Yeah. I was like, motherfucker, like later, it was you.
But did you come up with the slogan? Did
yes,
Joey Styles?
I no.
Okay, so
I came up with the Innovator of Violence. I actually dropped the Innovator of Violence after Chris Benoit,
right?
Because I was getting, and I was working in the office, I was getting so many calls to go on CNN and because about wrestling and violence. So I kind of dropped it.
Yeah.
But it was during the time when everybody had a nickname.
But and now are you back to it?
Nah.
No?
I use it if the announcer says it. If not, it was cool for a shirt. I rarely ever sign stuff, Innovator of Violence.
Right.
People specifically ask me for it, and I'm kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
I don't think wrestling is about violence. I think it, you know, I have done violent stuff. Recently just went back to TNA where I promised violence. I try to make that special. It's almost like, you know, I left, but now they're dragging me back in. So, it was a cool moniker.
Okay. So then, that leads me to where I wanted to go now. You were the Innovator of Violence. So now Tommy Dreamer goes to have a match on House of Hardcore, a wrestling match. What's this going to consist of? Now, are you still doing your old shenanigans, or is it more scientific?
Ooh, I've never been the scientific
I know.
Type. I will. Let me explain. We were talking about TNA. You know, I helped do some business for them at my house. It's my third ever show. I have Bubba Ray come in and attack me, which is going to help. TNA is going to do
it recently.
Yes. TNA is going to then go do a pay-per-view there. And we did a big angle after after my match. Bubba came in unexpected, unannounced, unadvertised. That's another thing I do for my show too, because I missed that element. I have brought guys in, not advertised them, didn't make
anything
a dime off their name. You never know what the hell can happen.
Yep.
So here comes Bubba. He lays out Funk. He lays out Sandman. He lays out Spike
That's
Dudley.
Great.
He lays me out. He makes the open challenge to me there. TNA's last event they had, I tripled their attendance in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. And me and Bubba, it was, again, a throwback in time. We're going at it. And to say it got violent and it got crazy, at 42 years old, we're going to do a spot. I climb up. He nutshots me. He's going to superplex me. He's going to superplex me on the steel guardrail. So we have the guardrail set. I'm 265. He's 280 now, in great shape. Because I'm an idiot, I decide for the first time in my life, I'm going to stand on the top rope. I'm not going to do the just go off.
Yeah.
You know, I decide to stand on the top rope and get a superplex onto a steel guardrail. And when I hit that, I said, I'm every bit 42 years old. I tasted steel in my mouth. And after my match, I had to quickly go home because I did not want them to see that I was slowly bending over.
Right.
The next day, I could not walk. And the hardest part about me, and I said this last week, in my head at times, I'm still 23 years old, but the recoup time.
Are you starting to realize, you dumb son of a bitch, that you are 42, 43? What are you, 43 or
40? 43.
You're 43 years old. Are you finally starting to get a little bit of a heads up?
What's it Sometimes. Take? For I know I don't look that good, but I do train hard to look this bad. It's quite sad. I met
What's
a guy.
Your workout routine?
I wake up every morning. I do hour cardio.
Right.
I have this thing I met on Twitter. The guy's name is Dr. Roland Berthalmu. He has low back tracks. I take it everywhere. I wake up in the morning, and some mornings I look like Terry Funk, or I got the shit in my pants walk, and I'm totally bent over. I lay on my back. I use this thing. And I'm fine. Two weeks ago, I injured my back wrestling doing a sky high, and I felt the pain up my hip. I flew home, could barely walk. I used this machine 5 times in the course of a day. The next morning, I was doing cardio. Joey Styles, I gave it to him. He was looking at back surgery. No more. He didn't need it. It has totally helped my body.
There's
not a gimmick.
What kind of gadget is it?
No, it's... You lay on your back and you use your own. It opens up the disc in between your back.
Right.
And it looks like bicycle handlebars, and you just push.
Right.
And it feels great.
Okay, but talk about the injuries. You had a broken neck, but you never got it fixed.
Yep. Never. I've never had a surgery. I've never had a surgery.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yep. I think me.
But you are progressively feeling worse.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I feel.
You are progressively feeling. You're a lying motherfucker.
I'm not. I wish.
Oh, come on, dude.
I wish you could watch. I'm slower.
Right now, you feel right now like you did when you got into business.
No. Of course not.
That's exactly
but I
what
feel,
I'm saying.
When I'm wrestling, I feel
and
no
the,
pain.
And the get up like a bent up old man thing, and then you go lay on your back gimmick.
Yeah, but yeah.
Okay,
but when I broke my neck.
But you got to know. I always like to talk to people. That are 5, 10, 15 years older than me. Because I always see, you know, I had a pretty physical style like you,
right.
but I'm just a snapback bumper type. But every 5, 10, 15 year increment, where are those guys at? How they're feeling? You're going to feel progressively worse the way you keep doing it.
Well, yes. That's
so what is the structure of a Tommy Dreamer match these days? Is it more stand up brawling?
No. Old school will never die. I usually do a little bit of wrestling, and then I have the bad guy usually cheat.
Yep.
Then that makes me have to go back to my Tommy Dreamer ways. There's usually a chair involved.
Yep.
And at House of Hardcore shows.
You ever get a bunch of concussions from chairs?
I've had tons of them.
Now, are you a hands up guy or are you a hands down guy?
Remember, you're original ECW. If you put your hands up for a chair shot, you would consider a pussy.
All right.
Bigger marks than ever?
God damn it. You know, no, it's going to come back and get you at some point.
At times, that's the only thing. Actually, I have a few regrets.
Okay, talk about them. You're
my
father now.
My one regret is at times my memory, I can remember anything about wrestling, anything. But like before, I don't know what year I got married. You asked me that. I would have to call my wife and say, what year did we get married? Or my wife will say, you already asked me that. And I'm like, really? Or the other day I came home from wrestling and I pulled my bags out. I went, you know, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, got home. And next morning my wife comes up, are you okay? I said, yeah. She goes, did you get hit in your head or anything? I said, no, why? And like when she first, you know, comes into your room and say, can I talk to you? First you're like, oh God, what did I do now? Like, am I in trouble? And she said, well, I went outside to throw out the garbage, and you left your trunk open, and it rained. And she goes, why didn't you close your trunk? I said, I can't tell you that. I don't know why. Or I've left the refrigerator door open. And now I have an alarm on my refrigerator door that goes off if it's open.
Yeah, you'll get one of those
too. And that scares me. Or even with my daughters, how was school, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll ask them something. Like, Dad, you already asked me that. But that's on one scale.
Right.
On the other scale, my grandmother, she just passed away. She's 98 years old.
Long genetic.
She wouldn't remember a lot of stuff either. Never took a bump in her life. My mom.
Well, she's 98.
Okay. But it's going to happen to all of us.
Yeah. You're 43.
My mother, 73.
Right. Good memory.
Great memory.
Okay.
I'll talk to her on Monday. She might tell me the same story on Tuesday.
And yeah, but that's mom's.
Okay, but it's gonna. That's like just saying, "Hey, Steve, that's
no,
just
you're 43.
Okay,
you can't pull that shit over here.
Trust me, it could happen.
We're sitting here overlooking the Broadway Theater in New York City, and you're full of shit.
I'm not full of shit. I do think I probably had anywhere from 13 to 16 concussions.
God,
I remember one time getting knocked out 3 times in a week. I got knocked out on a Friday, got my bell rung on a Saturday, and the following Saturday in the ECW arena, we had this big-ass match. Everyone was all crowded up. Leave me alone. I need air. I go outside. 3 hours later, I wake up. I'm still bandaged, still in my thing, and I'm at a Wawa drinking killer shakes that we'd always used to go to.
What's a Wawa?
Wawa is like a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And the girl, we'd always stop there, and the girl was like, Tommy, were you in a car accident? My head was all, you know, bloody. For 3 hours of my life, I disappeared. I checked my cell phone. Everyone was looking for me. I don't know where I went in Philadelphia, but I was unconscious for 3 hours of my life driving around Philadelphia. Shit like that does scare me now. Back then, we didn't think about that. I see so much. My goal is to change the wrestling business, but change it better for the wrestler in the sense of, again, dude, I used to drink human blood. I used to drink Raven's blood. And spit it out in the crowd. The best part about WWE, their wellness program. You could go out there and you don't know that you're wrestling this guy who has hepatitis.
Right.
You know, that's great. You know, the fact that, hey, you and I, how many friends have we buried because of pain pills and, right. and drug addiction? The business has changed that way. And it's good. It's sad. Like, I'll go out there and see guys doing drugs nowadays. And I'll be like, are you guys kidding me? You know, from what haven't you learned? It will affect you. You know, I watched my best friend Test, who's the biggest, strongest dude.
Yeah.
And I used to pull food out of his mouth or be like, I could push him down without even like batting an eye because he was all messed up.
Right.
And he died. And right. I think about him every day. And the business is progressing in that there's also guys out there that wrestle because they have to and not because.
Right.
I wrestle because I want to.
Right.
I wrestle because I love it. I don't wrestle because I have to. There's guys who have to go out there and do it. There's guys who need surgeries that can't get surgeries.
What do you think it is about the boys that so many of our friends have left this world too soon? More so than rock stars, than
yes.
football players and pro athletes, than anybody. Your take on why that is. Before you say that, I fired down a call to Test. I heard he was kind of messed up, and I called him. And he swore to me up and down.
Yep.
He goes, Steve, I'm in a good place. He goes, man, I'm not on anything. I'm doing good. And, you know, it sounded a little bit off, but he right. was swearing. So what I'm going to do, call him a liar on the phone. He's down in Florida. But anyway, after Brian Pillman left us, you know, anytime I would find out there's something wrong with one of the guys and maybe he was kind of having some issues, I would finally, you know, I would reach out because I felt it was my duty to at least, you know, try yes. to do something. And so, anyway, turns out not too much longer, and then he was gone. So back to my question, why in the fuck? And I've been there, dude, because, man, I ran with the drinking crowd. I did my share of pain pills, somas, and gimmicks, but I never got hooked on them.
Right.
This, that, and whatever, blow, here, there, you know. But sometimes I think to myself as I talk to one of my good friends who went down the same road I did, and sometimes I think, you know what, you know, I've been pretty lucky, you know, because I could have been a guy. So what's your take on this whole thing? Why have so many of our guys gone?
Well, one, they really are in pain. Two, they had to go out there and perform, and then you get hooked. Right. I remember, you know, Test really broke his neck. Test would sit in that car, like, man, I'm in so much pain. And you get hooked on him because you don't. I could tell you, I have smoked pot twice in my life.
Right.
I've taken, after ECW One Night Stand 2005, where the doctor prescribed to me and told me that I was going to lose my ear. I took half a Vicodin and I threw up in the WWE office.
You wasn't a pill guy.
I've never done any other drug. That's it.
Right.
It's not me. But again, like I said, because I had, you know.
You're a very rare individual. And don't get me wrong, Lance Storm is just like you. Lance Teetotaler, Jerry Lawler, Teetotaler. Your deal, your vice.
Right.
Women, great. There's so many guys. I mean, yeah, I get the pain aspect because, like many of the guys, I have extremely high threshold of pain.
Right.
So by the time you get some Vicodins or some perks or whatever, it's like you don't really take it because you're in pain. You don't mind the pain. Actually, you know, for me, it's like, okay, take a couple to kind of kick out and fill a little up.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny. I'm great friends with Matt Hardy and Carlito, and they've talked about, you know, doing drugs and all that stuff. And I was just with Matt Hardy. And he'd be like, I could totally tell when someone's messed up because I've been there.
Right.
And Matt has turned his life around. The grind gets to you, too. I know Carlito, you know, he straight up said, I wasn't happy. You know, you're self-medicating to just try to get through. This is all of our dreams. And if it doesn't pan out the way you are, no one, you know, for a lot of guys, got to understand this. The business isn't based purely on your talent. There's some really talented guys out there. It's based upon one or two people's opinion of you. That's it. That's right. It. You could be the most talented. You know who your talent matters? To the fans. And they're the ones that let you know you're the star. To get through a lot of that, guys would self-medicate or guys would do that stuff. I think also, you know, we're talking about guys wrestling past their prime or still living that lifestyle. From your generation, there's a little gap. We're about the same age, but there's a little bit of a gap.
Yeah.
There was more territories, and it was, you know, back in the day, you didn't like what a promoter said. Oh, go screw you. You know,
right.
I'll go work here. I'll go work there. Now it's still the mentality of, I've got another run in me. And you don't. This is a younger man's business. They can call you back or you can contribute in other ways. But, you know, you can't think, you know, oh, the business is going to change, or let me try to get the most money out of this guy, you know, the money mark, or, you know, I'll take advantage of this guy the best I can. I'll latch myself onto him. And then when it's gone, it's all dried up. But guess what? There's another guy around that corner that could do that. I think that's why a lot of guys think that way.
But let me ask you a question. Every now and then someone will leave and you'll always hear the patented, God dang it, when is Vince McMahon going to do something about this?
Yeah.
It ain't on his shoulders.
No.
I look at anything and everything that I've ever done, and I'm the motherfucker that owns up to it, is responsible for it, and has to be held accountable for it. Ain't nobody telling me to do nothing that I ain't going to do unless I want to do. So my point is, you know, it ain't nobody's fault.
Nope.
Whatever you choose to do for yourself, as a man, you got to be, if it leads to your demise or leads to your success, you got to be the one that says, hey, I'm responsible for this and be held accountable for it.
And there's also guys who I feel that they think they're above the business or they're deserved more. And then they get that bitterness.
Right.
And the business will move on without you. It has with every top star has left. And whether they come back or whether they never do, but the business continues to move forward.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Scott's Turf Builder makes lawn care easy. It gives your lawn the feeding it needs to thrive. Just put it down now and again next season to thicken your lawn, crowd out weeds, and keep it growing strong. Right now is the perfect time to feed and seed to build the perfect lawn for every season. When taking care of your lawn is this easy, enjoying your lawn is even easier. Pick up a bag of Scott's Turf Builder today. It's guaranteed or your money back. Feed your lawn. Feed it.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
All right, coming right back with the Tommy Dreamer on Twitter. House of Hardcore. Shows all over the place. The man, the myth, the legend. The white meat babyface himself. Hey, man, what the fuck happened to TNA? You were down there for a stretch.
Yeah.
What went wrong? What went south? Recently, I was on my Twitter account, Steve Austin BSR. You are the Tommy Dreamer on Twitter. I saw an exchange going back and forth between you and Dixie Carter. I was amazed. What went wrong? Was this a work, a shoot? What the fuck happened?
Okay. Well, again, I went there. I had a lot of fun there. I wrote.
You're talking about their shows that they ran in New York. No, your TNA run.
I had a little bit of a run there. Yeah. I wrote a show, Hardcore Justice. It was very successful for them. There was a different, let's say, a changing of the guard. There was different people in power than that there were there.
Originally.
If I didn't take politics in WWE, I'm not going to take politics somewhere else.
Right.
Dixie Carter and I have had a great relationship. She enabled me to have closure for ECW, say goodbye. I got to write a pay-per-view. I got to show the world, hey, just give me the ball and I will score a touchdown for you. I've done it before. Do it again. I leave. I do an angle at my show to help them with the pay-per-view. I wrestle some house shows for them, and I do their two pay-per-views. Again, have good matches. I will help out. I will help out any wrestling promotion. I will help out WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, New Japan, anybody who wants me, I will help you out. So I book the Dudleys at my show, stemming off of Bubba jumping me.
Yep.
At, you know, and it's going to be me and D-Von. I mean, I'm sorry, Bubba and D-Von versus me and Abyss. So I use some, book some TNA talent. And that's going to be a violent match. You know, we call it's going to an old school extreme war. And I got Abyss, who's crazy as well. And we're going to do some crazy stuff. We're going to do flaming tables, thumbtacks, you name it, you got it. Bubba has his, you know, the only thing that sucked for me, Bubba turns babyface. And now he's feuding with Dixie Carter. The 11th hour before my show, Bubba, who's, I found him in the business, calls me up and says, hey, I got a problem. TNA is pulling me from this show. I have to go and represent them at the Spike TV Awards. I'm pissed. So I turn old school ECW, Paul Heyman 101, I will not lie to my audience. I go out there and I cut a promo. And I turned negative into a positive. And I told Bubba, I'm going to put all the heat on Dixie because she is Impact Wrestling. He's got a feud with her, all this stuff. Go out there, I cut a promo on her at my show. When, again, me always keeping my promise, that will never air anywhere. It's edited out of the DVD because I said this is only for you people who are here.
Right.
I also offered refunds. I gave two matches for free and said, if you stick around, you're going to see a hell of a show. If not, you got two matches for free. You're not going to see your main event. You go get refunds. Not one person took it.
Awesome.
I go and I cut a promo. I did call her a bitch. There was, you're a crack whore. Dixie sucks. Cock. There was more chance at her. The fans in wrestling don't like her. So we now go fast forward to the show is a success. And I was thanking a lot of fans for coming to the show. And one fan in particular, there starts Dixie versus Dreamer, hashtag House of Hardcore. You know,
can you believe this hashtag shit?
Yeah. Well, dude, social media has changed the face of the business. You want to talk about the evolution of the business?
Yeah.
Social media changed the main event of WrestleMania. Changed Vince McMahon's plans for where he was going to go. So that's how important social media is.
Hashtag. Hashtag get back to the story.
You think about your show.
Yeah.
How much more does it mean when network executives say, hey, you need to live tweet during your show because there's more viewership? And it's not just wrestling. It's right. It's NFL. It's all that stuff. Anyway, hashtag back to my story.
Yeah.
So a fan
hashtag cheer shot.
A fan tweets to me, F Dixie Carter, Dixie fears Dreamer, House of Hardcore is better than Impact Wrestling. And to my phone, he shows a picture of my packed arena. So I write, thanks for coming, RT, retweet, and I send it right to Dixie. So now I'm sitting home on that Monday, and Dixie shoots a tweet at me, heard you had some nice choice words describing, you know, me, very classy. And then I straight up said, well, as always, you got your information wrong. And I think she's kind of like working with me here.
Yeah.
And as always, you got your information wrong. I just called you a bitch. Everyone else said way worse things about you.
Yeah.
So then she writes back. And this, again, during Monday Night Raw, where it's great to tweet because that's where you get your most, you know, listeners, and you write hashtag Raw, so everyone
hashtag
else.
Hashtag Raw.
So then she said, why don't you just.
I never figured I'd be in a goddamn little bitty ass hotel room huddled up with Tommy Dreamer talking about social hashtag. Media and a hashtag.
Yes.
Continue on.
So she writes back to me. Why don't you just book me, use my name, my IP, you know, my reference, all that stuff, to make you and your company more relevant? Wow. And I said, whoa, okay, she wants to shoot a little bit here. So then I responded, relevant, question mark, I have more followers than you. And that kind of put her off the edge.
Right.
Then the new guard in charge, Big from WWE's Tough Enough, John, who's always been really, really cool with me, he calls me up and he said, hey, I don't know where this is going, but this is great. And I said, oh, well, she can't knock me that hard and I'm not going to knock her back. And he said, okay, well, just, you know, we'll see where this goes. So then the next day, one of the writers called me and they said, well, she was mad about what you tweeted. And I said, well, she started first. Back to that original tweet on that Friday, what came to my phone was a picture of my packed house. But on my laptop, the guy split it in half and showed a not favorable picture of their show that was running the same. They had a bad house.
Right.
I would never have done that in a million years.
Right.
Dude, I've given more press releases of my they're not press. I just, hey, this is how it is. I apologize for it. I would never do that. I would never shit on somebody for having a bad house, whatever. So then they come to me and they just said, do you want to go on television and shoot all over her? And I said, okay. And we did it. We did it 2 weeks ago. It got a nice rating. I did it in a positive way of, again, you can't everybody armchair quarterbacks come Monday, come Friday. I said, this is what the business needs. And Impact Wrestling can have it. But the only thing they don't want to see is you. At the end of the day, Dixie Carter, what happened to that woman who was a gracious host? She used to sit amongst the fans and talk right. it. And whether she got lost in her character or there was no huge payoff because she's not a wrestler.
Right.
The weird dichotomy of all this is most people complain about Impact Wrestling. There's too much talking and or bad acting. But if you look at the hit, even in WWE, talking segments do better ratings a lot of times than actual wrestling. It sucks. I prefer less talking and more wrestling.
Right.
But TNA has been making a lot of changes, and there was a huge payoff. I look at TNA, and again, I'm in a weird situation because, yes, I'm helping out in the back, but I'm also have my own little company, and I'm also shooting on the boss. The greatest part about Steve Austin was you did what everybody wanted to do,
right.
but you had your parameters. You're not going to tell Vince, you know. Right. When you had your ultimate tell Vince, you did it behind the scenes,
right.
you know. But I'm doing it in front of the camera, and Dixie proved to me a lot in this past week doing the TVs here in New York. And to give it away, because I don't know when this airs, she went through a table and she took a hellacious bump. And I look at these every great franchise, or there's always a key moment in a franchise's time. You look at the Immaculate Reception with the Steelers. You look at the Ice Bowl snap, the Tuck Rule with the Patriots. There's always these moments in time where you can look back and say, this is where it turned around. And I think these New York TVs helped TNA turn around. If you go and watch them, it's different. And for me, in a brief moment in time, I don't want to say it was 97 again. I have a specific moment where I'm wrestling Ethan Carter, and I looked right up at her, and she's in the balcony of the Manhattan Center, and she's surrounded by Atlas Security and these fans who are so rabid and into anything we did. And I'm doing the 10 punches deal.
Yeah.
And they're so into it, I'd go another 10. At the last,
is it 10 punches at work?
Yes.
Okay,
I'd break my hands.
Hashtag,
and guess what?
Hashtag
I went to 20. And then I bit him.
Double down.
And I look right before I went and did the last one, which then I go and bite him. I look right at her, and I got so lost in that moment. And it was just me and her, eyes to eyes, surrounded. And I went, why don't you suck my fucking dick? And I grabbed my dick, thinking like I was at ECW. The place erupted, and then I bit the kid.
Yeah.
And then in hindsight, I was like, maybe I haven't done, shouldn't have done that. This is on Spike Television. This would be, you know, it's not a PG show. I mean, it's not, you know, under 13,
right.
but she is kind of, you know, paying me some checks here and there. So, but yeah, I got so lost in that emotion. But I think that we have they're changing things around, and they're also.
So you're saying these three television tapings that they did in New York City are going to make them turn the corner?
I hope so. They're different, and I saw some amazing wrestling. And you got to stand that locker room is great.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love TNA. I mean, I don't love them, but I mean,
right.
I want them to continue
yes.
on. I want them to stay in business. I want there to be competition. I want there to be other options for the guys and gals.
Yep, and I mean, Eric Young, he's wrestling Bobby Lashley. Dude, he hurt his shoulder, and he hurt his ankle. He twisted his ankle so bad and went out there and had an amazing match with Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley has so stepped up, and it's not like he has 10 different people pulling him different ways, or hey, do it this way, hey, doing it that way. There's a direction for Bobby, and he's stepped up. Bobby Roode, another guy, an amazing wrestler. The girls, the Knockouts, they go out there and they work their ass off. And if they can do this, again, these TVs are different. They're special. I watched the Wolves versus the Hardy Boys, and you know, they always, I remember reading in magazines, you know, would we ever see Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair? Would we see, you know, Lex Luger versus Hulk Hogan back, you know, when they were both, you know, in their prime? The Hardys versus the Wolves was an amazing wrestling match. Then the next night, they followed it up with the Dudleys versus the Hardys, which was like, whoa, it's a throwback in time.
Right.
And for the younger talent that's stepping up, they have a new guy named Bram who reminds me of the next Jake the Snake Roberts. He has it. I could see it in his eyes. I could see it in his work.
How tall is he? How long has he been working?
He was actually in the WWE system. He's married to Ric Flair's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about 6'4".
Oh, great.
He's got a great body. He's got a great look. And he does things differently.
If he's in their system, why is he out of their system?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that. Ethan Carter was in the WWE system. I helped him get hired in WWE. And now Ethan Carter is doing the wrestling business. He could become a top heel. And it went from you can't wrestle, or they thought he was just getting his push, because to now he's been in a program with Bubba for the longest time. He's done a little bit to me, but he stepped up to the plate. And he's getting an opportunity, but he's also answering it. They have another guy named Rockstar Spud, who's Dixie's lackey, who's so entertaining. He reminds me of Stevie Richards. In the beginning, he was just a comedy act, and this kid has got it. He gets heat.
He just needs to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah, well, no. Yeah. He's a small guy. The best part about him, he understands that.
Yeah.
And you know, again, these recent TVs, they brought in people that you were like, what? What are they doing here? They went all out. And it was every night, three nights in a row, sold out. Yes, it's a smaller venue, but you sell out Manhattan, that's good. It's going to come off great on TV. And then guess what happens? You now get to go down to the downstairs building, which is the Hammerstein.
Right.
Which, if that you sell that out, and then the process continues. But again, they're thinking. I've been in those meetings. At times it felt like it was a fight. Now I'm in those meetings and everyone's working together. And wrestling to me should be a team.
Well, we'll see how that turns out. Let's go back to House of Hardcore. What's your next show? What's the future mode for your promotion?
Taking the summer off. I'll probably run again. I don't have any set dates. It's cool because, you know, when you were talking about independent wrestling, it's a lot like owning a deli, in the sense of it's nickels and dimes to make your profit. Philadelphia is wide open for me, and I'm drawing really, really good houses there. Same with Poughkeepsie. The expansion that I did to the West Coast paid off, and the casino wants me to come back. I would like to go to one or two other markets. The hardest thing, this is my money, and right. It's a large chunk of change. Most people, you know, when you talk about independent wrestling, for me, if you want to run a show in New York, number one, you got to get insurance. You got to pay for advertising. You will dip into about $4,000-$5,000 before you're even able to put tickets on sale. And that's not including talent. That's just for all the little things that you need to run a show. So, you know, I'm hoping for September, October, November, probably go back to Philadelphia. And maybe expand to one or other two markets that I really like to go to. And if that continues, I just, you know, I have my philosophy is this is like a baby. You have to crawl before you can walk, walk before you can run. I'm not going to expand too soon. I've already had people offer me, like, you know, little things. I'm absolutely not. I don't have the finances to, you know, do this on a weekly basis, because the shows run me anywhere from 15 to 20 grand a show. And thank goodness I've been making a profit. I have said this publicly and I'll say it again. The moment I lose $1, I'm not doing it anymore.
Right.
Because I can't. I've been down that road before and I don't want to be there. If any of your listeners have millions of dollars and would like to invest in a wrestling company, I will change the world with you.
You can find him at the Tommy Dreamer on Twitter. They can find you at what? Thehouseofhardcore.net and thetommydreamer.com. Hey, last thing before you leave right off into the sunset and then I take my sorry ass to sleep to go promote my show. Your favorite wrestler of all time?
All of them. I don't have a favorite.
Don't have a favorite.
You have a favorite match? No.
You have a match that stands out in your motherfucking mind. Work with me just a con here.
Listen to me. Stop saying the C word. There's female listeners here.
Oh, jeez. And you're talking about strip clubs and lawsuits
and banging midgets with women. No.
A match that you love.
I love them all, bro. This has been my dream since I'm a kid. I've had some of my greatest matches on indie.
Well, I know, but I mean, I don't have a bunch of matches that, you know.
There are so many that I like.
Okay, I'll make one up for you. No, I won't.
I don't have one. I never had a favorite wrestler because I loved them all. I was influenced by so many. Dusty Rhodes was my favorite. Hulk Hogan was my favorite. I liked everybody. You have no clue.
You're working with me.
If it was the Killer Bees, I was cheering for the Killer Bees.
Tie a skillet to my foot and some butt kick.
The innovator of Stone Cold. What?
Dude, a while ago, this is the smallest room in history, and there's an ironing board in there. I broke that ironing board out and got my iron out to iron my shirt so I don't have any wrinkles, but I look good today. And if I got to break that fucking ironing board and hit you in the head with it, I will.
As always,
Tommy, we're on the 35th floor. You can take the window, and you can take the stairs.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
As every single thing in wrestling's been done before, I have been already hit with an ironing board.
Have you been hit with an ironing board,
and I have been suplexed on an ironing board, and I bounced off of it.
Did you get hit with an iron yet?
To the nuts, yes.
Well, fuck. Well,
and then they ironed my back to press out my shirt. Okay. This is the greatest business in the world. I love this business. I love everything about it. I have... everyone was my favorite. Every match that my motto has always been, I wrestle every single match like it's my last because I know one day it will be. I can probably name least favorite matches more than my favorite matches, right, just because I've loved them all. There's matches that stand out for me. There's, again, as a promoter and going to see, or as writing shows and seeing a pay-per-view come together and just seeing the fans receive it well. These House of Hardcore shows where everybody's an armchair quarterback and you do a show and there's nothing negative, that means the world to me. No, I don't have a favorite. I could probably tell you one of my favorite matches to watch was the recent House of Hardcore 6 show where it was the Young Bucks versus Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. And I watched it in the audience like I like to do, as well as I saw Matt Hardy, Bushwhacker Luke, Terry Funk, all watching this match. It was a locker room sellout.
Right.
And I'm saying to myself, whoa. And they were like, that match was unbelievable. And I'm so happy for guys like the Young Bucks who are doing it the right way. And
who are the Young Bucks?
The Young Bucks are an amazing tag team. They were Generation Me in TNA. They had a cup of coffee in TNA.
Okay.
I would build a company around them. I have. They were on my shows. You'll see them. I gave you the DVDs. And they went to New Japan, and now they're top stars in New Japan.
Okay.
They were viewed as too small. They had tryouts in WWE. But they are amazing, and I'm a big fan. What's missing, and there's a lot of things missing in the business, and I feel tag teams are missing.
Boy, they are too. I love tag team wrestling. Just ain't enough of it going on these days. You got one more funny road story before I hit the stop button on this podcast?
I have a million funny road stories. I have stories about everyone. Again, I've been wrestling since I'm 18. I'm 43. I'm coming up.
But see, you remember it all.
So I do.
That's where your memory banks don't run dry, whereas mine do. So give me a quick story.
All right. I'll go back to the story I was telling you about a strip club coming back to the room. I could go newer. ECW, every
classic.
Single.
I want funny, laugh out loud classic.
Okay. So the whole strip club comes back to our room. We got Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
We got 6 to 7 girls in our room. We got four guys. I'll leave off some of the guys' names.
Right.
Guy takes one of the girls into the room, and he leaves. He walks out in about 2 minutes. She comes out, and everyone's like, well, where did he go? And he just left.
Yeah.
And... so this girl, now I'm sitting there, we're talking, and the one culprit is Matt Stryker. I'll throw him under the bus. He doesn't have a girlfriend, whatever. He's my buddy.
Okay.
He's sitting there, and you know, he's trying hard to get with 2 to 4 of these girls. And the girl, I overhear her say,
they're playing hard to get?
No, she's like, I'm so horny. He just like finished and so,
right,
so quick. And so I'm like, all right, let's go. We all know what we came here to do. This girl start going at it. So now we're watching an orgy going on in my room, right? And there's now smoking pot. This is also in the WWE TV hotel while this is all going on. I don't do any drugs. I'm just sitting back in my chair. I'm enjoying all the debauchery that's going on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, knock, 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 and everyone freezes. It's like high school all over again. We're like, shh, shh. So you think it's security. They smell that there's weed going on or something. And I walk up, and again, because I'm sober, I'm straight. I look through the mirror, the peephole.
You got clothes on?
Of course I have clothes on. No one needs to see me naked ever. The lights are on. You just need to have all these girls going at it. There's six of them, bro. So I look back, and they're like, who is it? And I look again, and I say, guys, I think I'm, what is that, contact high? And they're like, who is it? And I go, it's Freddie Prinze Jr. and the kid from Home Alone. And they're like, no, it's not. And I open up the door. Freddie Prinze was working for WWE. And the kid from Home Alone, the...
Macaulay Culkin.
No, Kieran.
Kieran.
He walks in. They all walk in. And as soon as the... As soon as... what's his name? Freddie sees it, he just hightailed. Because, you know, he was married, everything.
Right.
But the other kid, he just like, what's up? And he just... And then all the girls left for the more famous celebrity. And the girls left us for the kid from Home Alone.
So did you brought his name up? Did Stryker score?
Stryker scored several times with I think about four of them.
Motherfucker, you're my hero.
I got, dude. I could tell you millions of those. I love the debauchery. I love the.
Yeah, but I mean, you're married. Your wife's okay with it?
Well, yeah, I guess unless she doesn't listen to this podcast. I actually told her about
nobody
that story.
Listens to the show.
She got a laugh at that, and she knows Matt Stryker was a dirty little individual. Like I said, you know, you go out with the boys, and you go out to have fun. You don't have to, you know, a bunch of people could be doing drugs. You don't have to do drugs.
Right.
You could just go out there and enjoy it. You know, old school ECW. I'll tell you one quick one right before I'm running a show. Paul Heyman is not there. No Rhino, no Little Guido, no Bill Alfonso, no Sandman, no Raven. We're running a show. I'm running the show. Paul Heyman is not there. Where the hell are these guys? Nobody's calling me. I'm switching the card on the fly. Rhino comes in. He's a tense man. Rhino comes in, and he's got tears in his eyes. And he goes, I need to fucking talk to you right now. So we go into a side room. He throws his bags. He turns around. He's bawling his eyes out. I can't fucking drive with these guys anymore. I'm thinking they're ribbing him. And he goes, these motherfuckers, blah, blah, blah. Sandman's dead. I'm so sorry we're late. And I said, whoa, whoa, what do you mean Sandman died? And he goes, Sandman died. We stupid him. And now I just been told that my friend is dead. And I'm like, back up. And he's crying. He's flipping over tables. I'm like, what do you mean Sandman died? He goes, well, we brought him back to life. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. So they're in the car. And Sandman overdoses on Nubane.
Oh, Jesus.
In the car, dies. They stopped over at a rest stop.
Oh.
He shoots himself up. He gets in the car. And they say, Sandman's turning purple. By the grace of God... They see a H sign on the side of the hospital. So, instead of immediately rushing to take a man who's dead in your car to the hospital, they pull over the side of the road, and they get Bill Alfonso out, and they hand him all the drugs, because they feel, and Fonzie just tells him, I'll walk to the hospital, Daddy, or come pick me up at the end of the exit. Because
yeah.
If a guy dies, and there's going to be an investigation, whatever. Right. So... They pulled up to the emergency room, threw Sandman to the floor, and said, we found this guy, and we think he's dying, and dropped him off at the hospital. And then, so at that point, we didn't know if Sandman was alive or dead. And I have to run the show. And then Sandman calls me, and he shows up IV. He goes, they stuck adrenaline right in my heart like Pulp Fiction. I'm ready to go. So Sandman died on his way to a show in Milwaukee. Adrenaline needle to his heart, and came back and wrestled that night. But again, your friend dies in the car. What's the first thing we do? Pull over. Let's get rid of the drugs.
That's a shoot.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But Rhino, Sandman, Guido, they all confirmed it. Sandman would tell me, I've died three times before. I shouldn't have made it this long.
How is he doing now?
He's doing great. He doesn't wrestle. He just makes appearances. I use him on all my shows. It just I say he's my good luck charm because I could always close a show with him. And
how old is he now?
He's 50.
Yeah.
And but he's pretty much got his act together. He still drinks, but he doesn't do any drugs. He has another kid, little kid. He's doing good for himself. I don't know what he does in the real world, but we talk all the time. You know, he sent me random Sandman texts. Like he'll send me a picture of him trying to start a solo wave at like Shea State. I mean, I'm sorry, at the Mets game. Yeah, yeah. And I'll be like, all right, thanks for calling me that you're in New York. He's like, let's do breakfast. I mean, I just had him in. I used him all my shows. So I just seen him like 3 weeks ago and I asked him if he could dye his hair at least because he's all gray. And he's like, nope, I'm not. I was like, okay, thanks.
Dude, what do you do for hobbies?
Nothing. I tweet. And there are two of me. And no one ever gets to see this person. I'm Tommy Dreamer 24/7. And once I close my doors, I'm Tom Lachlan. And that's for my kids. And even it's hard. I think there should be a rehab program for wrestlers to adapt to the real world because it is hard. You're not really in the real world, but I have to go pick up my kids at school. And besides people looking at you or who I got to take a picture with, or you go grocery shopping, I cannot not be me. I know who I am because I've always been a regular guy, but my hobbies are my daughters. And then once that ends, they go to sleep, and then I'm back to, you know, promoting. You know, when you're running shows, it's like working in the WWE office. It's 24/7,
right?
Or you know, whatever goes on.
How much do you sleep? You know, Vince hates to sleep. You're a promoter now. How much are you sleeping?
About 3 hours a day. I've also, you know, I know I'm. Terry Funk told me this. Anything that you do, everything you do regarding to wrestling, you have to do 100%, as well as any day of wrestling is a great day. And I still hold that true. I've been doing a lot of movies. I work with a movie company that signed a 10-picture deal. We have a movie coming up with Martin Scorsese attached to it. I, again, started the first movie I did with them, Free. They're great. Woodhaven Productions, the directors, Tom DiNucci, uses me in all his films. They were like number three on Netflix for like 11 days, which is big. I really do enjoy acting. If I would ever leave wrestling full time, I would try to do that. I love that. I guess Netflix would be something I do late at night, and YouTube just to watch wrestling.
What time do you go to sleep?
Yeah, about 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Then usually 7-8 for my kids, take them to school.
And you survive on that?
I can. I just started shooting a movie and a year and a half ago. And
just started shooting New Bane?
No, I started. I started drinking coffee first time in my life.
Really?
Yeah. Now I'm addicted to it.
Yeah, because you're old.
Yeah, it's good.
You're taking unprotected chair shots.
I'm not. How about my House of Hardcore show? First time ever. I told you, for TNA's One Night Only, I took a super duper plex on a steel guardrail, like an idiot. House of Hardcore show, I turned the negative into a positive, but guess what? The first time I took ever in my life, thumbtacks. I took a choke slam into thumbtacks.
How
first
was
time
that?
Ever.
Invigorating or painful?
It did not hurt when I first hit it. It was actually like, okay, that's all right. And Abyss gave it to me. And Abyss has as much passion for the wrestling business as I do. And he gave me the big choke slam, boom. And then when guys are bouncing around you, or you have to move... Now they're slowly going
right
into you. And the fun part, again, being a promoter, being a wrestler, breaking a table. Yay, everyone pops. Being a promoter, tables cost like $135
right
a table. I hate when people break right tables now because when I got to pay for it. Anyway, we're putting the matches together. Abyss tells my students to go out and get thumbtacks. They go out on an independent show and purchase 2,000 thumbtacks. So I took a bump into 2,000 thumbtacks.
I was, I mean, so.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about it is,
I'm more religious. I'm a lot more holy.
Right, but when you go to get up, it's all the extra thumbtacks.
Yeah.
You don't need to make an extra print. Just try to sit up.
I
always thought there was money in Abyss, Joe Park, whatever the hell his name is, in WWE. And obviously the Abyss, to me, was kind of a spinoff of Mankind. But I loved when he played the goofy dork guy. And I don't know if some people had heat with the guy or not, but I thought the guy was really good at that role.
He's amazing.
I enjoyed it.
That was he's good at anything he does.
Yeah.
He's next to The Undertaker. He's my favorite character like that.
Yeah, I thought he was tremendous. I just kept thinking New York's going to pick this guy up. There's money with this guy. Nothing ever happened.
Here's a behind-the-scene exclusive scoop only for you because I don't do these things. When I worked in talent relations, I actually had signed Abyss, and they wanted to do Abyss versus The Undertaker for WrestleMania. And negotiation, he was free and clear.
Right.
But then I had signed him, and then he backed out, and he got scared, and he stayed where he was, which he has no regrets. But
they did
Nathan Jones versus A-Train.
I'll be goddamn.
I think Undertaker versus him would have been an amazing matchup.
Oh, it would have been. And he's a big kid.
He's awesome. I would work every match for the rest of my life with Abyss if I could.
Yeah.
I love working my...
Well, I thought there was something about the guy. And
there still is.
Yeah, there still is.
He
and it's not like they just got a shitload of talent piling out of the woodwork. So, hey, man.
I call him the Cookie Monster Abyss.
Hey, we're looking down the street. There's an ambulance parked down the way. I have seen more cabs, Tommy, passing by than I've ever seen in my entire life.
We're not in the Broken Skull Ranch, bro. This is the city that never sleeps. They're all wrestling promoters. Everybody here.
Broken Skull Ranch since 2007. Since that time, there's never been a cab on my property, but I'm looking at a bunch of them. Hey, man, I appreciate you coming by the smallest hotel room in New York City and hanging out with me. We did the second half of the podcast. Tommy was sitting on my lap, but it's all professional, and... You were great.
I appreciate you having me again. I don't do these. It's amazing. Social media has changed the face of the business. Podcast. They just did a study. More than half the U.S. population listens to podcasts. And I think you're the only podcast I've ever listened to. I don't preferably like them. Everyone has asked me to maybe I should get my own.
Yeah.
But you make it interesting. And even when you called me up, you said, let me do my research. I don't have time to listen to podcasts, but I listen to yours. And
man, I started researching. I said, man, I did all that. But then I said, man, I just shouldn't talk with this cat.
I appreciate you having me. And, we get to plug my stuff. I follow you on Twitter. I love the fact that yourself, Eric Young, anybody, man, if they're making a living in wrestling is one thing. Surviving outside of wrestling is great. And, the fact that you don't have to go out there and do indies, or the fact that you I've watched your movies. I've listened to your podcast. You bust your ass and attack at a project just like you did with The Ring. You go all out, and I got nothing but respect for you. And thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. It was great talking to the one and only Tommy Dreamer there in New York City. Tommy, shout out. Thanks for coming down to the hotel in New York City and making the drive. Good luck with everything. House of Hardcore Promotions. Y'all can keep up with Tommy Dreamer on his Twitter account, The Tommy Dreamer. And House of Hardcore, what is it, .net or .com, Tommy? Shit, I don't even remember. I've been hitting the head with too many steel chairs. But anyway, thank you to Tommy Dreamer for coming on down and having a good time shooting the breeze and looking at the wonderful theater district in New York City.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called The Big Brother Jake Podcast, and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby. Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything. Life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.